Hey, it's Friday, and you're listening to the Touch Arcade Show, the number one podcast on the internet. There, I said it. Straight up, number one podcast on the internet. I think we are.
We are in my little insulated bubble where I only listen to one podcast.
It's the number one podcast that I listen to for shurzies. I'm your host, Brad Nicholson, and of course I'm joined by my two lovely co-hosts, Eli Hodap.
Hello, Brad.
Nice. And the bearded one, Jared Nelson.
Yo.
Excessive cussing.
We're changing roles, dog. Hey, listen, that's just who I be. And, you know, whatever. That's all I got to say.
The streets of South Carolina.
Absolutely. I grew up with a weird crowd. Not a lot going on this week, just in general. I've been kind of looking through TouchArcade.com and kind of messing with, you know, just turning the cranks in the old brain, trying to figure out exactly, you know, what do I remember from this week? And I don't
remember. This has been a weird week. It's been very slow on the news front, but then, like, last night, or I guess it would be Wednesday night if you're listening to this on Friday, there was, like, 30 games that came out that were, like, noteworthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, where did that all come from?
Dude, no idea. It's different. Maybe the solstice is just like the date where you push out your hot new huge iOS game, maybe.
So you are suggesting that the phases of the App Store are tied closely to the phases of the moon?
Absolutely. That's my conspiracy theory. You can catch that on TouchArcade.com later on Friday afternoon. The investigative report with
TouchArcade.com/conspiracy.
Yes. Yes. And I think UFOs actually have a part of it, and also the moon landing. I think they're all tied in together, Eli.
None of those things happened.
I will expose those involved.
Oh God!
But you know, it's weird because in the traditional industry, like, we see nothing almost in the summer. We get like one game, right? Whereas the movie industry is like every hot fucking new movie comes out right in June and July. So, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just like, hey, solstice, let's go. Like I said, I think it's tied. It's a holiday, right? Like the iOS store, you know, it's always about holidays.
It is, yeah. That's one of my favorite things about iOS developers. I think they just look at any listing of holidays and just put their things on sale for a minor holiday.
Even Father's Day. They're just like, hey, it's Father's Day.
Cashmere Pulaski Day, 99 cent sale.
No, I love Game Loft sale because I remember writing that post on Father's Day trying to figure out exactly what they were shooting for because, like, you know, that Chaos Online game was even in there. It was just like,
Order and Chaos, yeah.
Yeah, I was just kind of like, what? I don't know if this really jives with, like, FIFA and Tiger Woods and stuff or whatever. No, I got the EA sale mixed up with that. You know, but anyway, no rhyme or reason I really, really discovered. I think they were just kind of like, hey, it's a holiday. That's an excuse, right? Mm. Let's get on those charts.
Well, we didn't have a Flag Day holiday. They missed that on June 14th. We did do a Father's Day thing. Okay. Sword and Sorcery had the summer solstice sale.
Yeah.
So the next sale sounds like it's going to be this Friday for St. John Baptiste Day.
Wow, that's a day?
Yeah.
What'd he do?
June 24th. I don't know.
To the Wikipedia.
July 1st, Canada Day. I'm expecting a big sale from Canadian developers.
Nice.
You know there's going to be a sale on Independence Day.
Yeah.
And then things get a little quiet until July 24th, which is Parents Day.
So wait, was it Pope Baptiste?
Jean Baptiste Day.
You know what? I think actually tomorrow is celebrating John Paul II Day, according to Wikipedia, boys.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard Day.
You know what? Now it says that.
That happened last week, didn't it?
That's a day.
Picard Day? Yeah.
Wow.
Make it so.
Yes, you can do whatever when you're Captain Picard. I mean, I got nothing. I mean, I haven't even been doing anything. I went to the doctor the other day and got my bones examined. It's either a rotator cuff tear or a small stress on the end, I guess, the corner of my shoulder. So it means I can't lift heavy things for up to 3 weeks.
Oh, damn it.
What are you going to do?
Dude, I've been, like, crying myself to sleep at night. Like, this is bad. Like, it's only been 2 days since I've lifted. And I don't know what to do, man. I don't know what to do with myself. I got all this energy and it's going nowhere except in my head where I'm saying, yo, you should probably go work out. I'm just saying that to myself all the time and I know I can't. That's where the energy is funneling. It's just all there.
This sounds like the beginnings of madness.
I think it is. I think I need to go lift and screw those doctors. They can just put me back together again. I've seen RoboCop. They just ditched the arm.
My preferred vision of the future is Jason X.
What happens in that?
They have those nanobots that can like fix anything, including bringing Jason back.
And then his body hit the floor?
I think that happens in every Friday the 13th.
Dude, maybe. I was quoting the Drowning Pool song used in the movie's trailer. I used to work at a movie store when I was younger, and I had to watch that crap all the time.
I think you just outed yourself as someone who has worn guyliner as well.
Never went that far. I will say, though, there was fingernail polish used maybe once or twice. Maybe.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, Carson Daly did that, too. And, hey, you paint your toenails. The things you learn. This is what you... Jared, what do you paint?
There is photo proof of that.
Jared, what do you paint?
Teeth? I don't paint anything.
You got
I spent
piercings?
All my time carefully growing a beard. So.
Piercings.
No, nothing. I don't even have a tattoo or anything.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, Jared's like me. We're trained to be Navy SEALs, and we can't mark our body up in any way.
Wait, don't SEALs have, like, SEAL tattoos?
I don't think so. I think part of being a Navy SEAL is you can't be identifiable, like, if they capture you.
Oh, so when they capture the huge, white, and fit American in the water, they won't be able to tell where he's from?
Something like that.
Okay.
But again, that's information that I've gotten from like the Metal Gear Solid game, so who knows if that's actually true or not.
Yo, I never want to meet that Psycho Mantis dude, I'll tell you that.
Knowing that, though, it's probably accurate.
Who knows? Hey, let's get into what are you playing? I will start this off with one of those hot games that Eli mentioned earlier. It's called War Grimoire. I can barely say that name, which is always a bad sign. It's a tower defense game, and it's interesting in that it's I guess number one that it's fantasy focused, so archers and as well as melee troops as well, which is something you don't see a lot from tower defense games, I guess, or just kind of like melee kind of stuff.
Well, they're not like towers; you're placing like soldiers.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're substitutes, right? So yeah, the soldiers are the towers. You know where it's remarkable is in the fact that you can pretty much place your dudes wherever you want. The kickback from that is that enemies can pretty much go wherever they want to. Now, they have set paths, just like a tower defense game, but they're extremely manic. Like, you can never really predict where they're going to go, which is inevitably a bad thing, being that, you know, you have a finite amount of resources you can allocate anywhere, or allocate anywhere. So... It gets really messy. I've been stuck on the fourth level for the last probably about an hour and a half of the game I've been playing so far, and I'm just kind of having a tough time. It's particularly English-y as well. Like it is definitely not well written by any means.
I always look at that as a positive in games.
Yeah,
I agree.
The problem is that it's trying to explain some pretty obscure leveling up and management mechanics, because there's also a lot of RPG like gamification inside of it as well. So like you can level up troops and stuff like that using gold that you've earned, I guess, from current levels or something to that effect. See, again, I don't grasp all the concepts of the game, mainly because, one, I'm still learning, but two, like, you know, I don't really understand what the hell the game is trying to tell me majority of the time.
You can't move your dudes after you place them, correct?
Right.
I mean, it almost seems like it's like a turn-based strategy game, but without the turns.
I wouldn't call it that. I mean, it's tower defense through and through.
Well, I don't know. It just is weird. It's weird to me. I don't know what to... I mean, I guess tower defense makes sense, but...
You know, and I think where it could get interesting is like what we saw in the screenshots, where there's just like a mess of dudes. But you know, again, like that's kind of a slippery slope, because you want that mess, that glorious orgy of like crimson and body parts and bullets to have some kind of rhyme or reason to it. Like you want to be able to control that in some regards, and I'm not really sure that you can. In this game, and it'll be interesting as I continue to play it, if I ever do get get a grasp and really understand the overall vision. Because that's another thing, too. I don't really understand what these guys are shooting for with this game. Like, is it supposed to be as open as I think it is?
I don't know. It's weird. It's like they wanted to... like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they almost forgot to implement like a grid system or something to make placement right. make more sense or something.
Yeah, there are places it restricts, but even then, I don't understand why it restricts it. Like, the one level I'm playing in right here, not right here, but right now, is that there's a door at the very top, and if the monsters reach the door, of course, that counts towards your health total that you get. You know, they're hitting your home base, I guess. On one side of the door, you can put a dude. On the other side of the door, which looks exactly like the one side of the door that you can put a dude, you can't put a dude. And I guess that's maybe because enemies can walk that way? But
well, I'm looking at the game's thread right now, and the developer is posting in it, and like he doesn't seem to be very fluent in English either.
Oh, no, you can definitely tell.
For instance, this is a direct quote, "The real tower is going to appear later. Be patient."
Yeah, and that's another thing about the game, too, I forgot to mention. Your home base is completely obscured. Like, you have no idea where it is. Like, you just don't know where it is until, like, some dude hits it. And then like, the only feedback that you get is, like, your heart meter, which is your health, just goes down one pip. You're just like, all right. I mean, it's you know, you always have to kind of couch this. It's an iOS game, right? So it's, like, $3.
It's big, too. Isn't it, like, a gig?
I thought it was just, like 400 megabytes for the HD version, but I could be wrong. I'll have to check that again.
Yeah, people in the thread are saying it's 962 megabytes. Oof, like yikes. Installed, which is a lot for a tower defense game.
Yeah, that's intense, and I don't really see why. I mean, it's a vibrant game, but it's not necessarily inspired by any like fine design or art. By any means, it's a real messy game. Just in general,
I don't know, which is so strange about this. The screenshots look so nice, the art looks so nice, the like the trailers they put out look so nice. But it's like, I don't know what happened to the rest of it.
Well, you know, just like a tower defense game, if you know exactly where to put stuff, you win, right? It's super simple, right? Like as soon as you get like the developer's like overall vision, just even for a level, it's beautiful and it all works and you feel good. I mean, but right now I'm still in like that weird trial and error phase, and the game is really not giving me the proper amount of feedback so I can go into new levels and feel confident about what's going on and how things are implemented. And I mean, it's a process. I mean, certainly I'll write something up for the site because this is a remarkable looking game, and you know, it's an iOS game, so you know, a lot of this stuff can slide, right? These are permissible kind of errors, but I mean, we'll see. Eli, you've probably played something that I'm sure you won't have or will have few qualms with. Tiny Tower.
Oh, man. Well, I'm still playing Tiny Tower. Like, I think I mentioned it before, but yeah. Holy cow. This game is like, I usually don't get into the free-to-play kind of time sink games. I mean, like, even Nibblebit's other game, Pocket Frogs, I didn't really get sucked into that much. But Tiny Tower... I don't know. It's really good, and it's out now, and it's free, so you should try it. But it's like Sim Tower, but without a lot of the Sim stuff, and instead it's just like this fun little time-wasting game where, well, they're just dinged right now, but the...
cool ding, I mean, bro.
The idea is, you know, you just build a tower, and it doesn't have a spoil mechanic, so it doesn't penalize you for not checking it, but it seems like there's basically always something to do if you check it, like, randomly throughout the day. Which is just really cool because, yeah, I just love games where, you know, you're standing in line or whatever and you can just do like a couple quick things and then be done with it. And this fits so well into that. But at the same time, because of the lack of a spoilage mechanic, you know, you don't have to do it at all. Like, you could leave your tower for like weeks if you wanted to and you would not get penalized. Which kind of always seems like a weird thing to me to include in so many of these free-to-play games, you know? Like, why? Like, if I don't come back to your game, why are you punishing me?
Right.
You know, like if I have a bunch of stuff that's going to be, you know, ready over the weekend and I'm too busy to play your game, why then when I load it up do I get like a slap on the wrist on Monday and like all my progress is ruined? Like, that just seems weird.
Yeah, I hate that.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know why people do that.
Yeah, I think that we're still kind of in a weird transition phase where we're trying to get rid of a lot of those old arcade concepts, a lot of the punishment, the punitive stuff for you know, not following exactly what somebody wants, or just like that general idea that you need to see a game over when you screw up or whatever. And you know, I think death throes, man. I think that stuff will be gone in a year. Like wouldn't even be a valid kind of thing. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of already happened in like the console space with like checkpoint based games. You know, where it's like if you die, you don't lose very much progress. You know, you just try again. And like a lot of games, even like I know God of War, you know, will ask you if you want to reduce the difficulty if you fail too many times in a specific spot.
Yeah, well, I mean, even L.A. Noire, which is an open-world detective game, it's essentially a glorified point-and-click title. There's right. action segments, and you could just straight-up skip them if you die.
Yeah, I don't. It's kind of interesting. I wonder when that's going to transfer over to the free-to-play world, you know? And I wonder when the free-to-play world is going to graduate from this weird, like, kind of, you know, farming time sync mechanic.
Well, it's all carrot on a stick, right? And, like, it's so easy to make that happen with, like, farm games and just simple little things like that.
I guess, but, I mean, like, when are people going to, like, really grow tired of that, you know? I mean, it seems like Zynga can release a new farming game, like, every week, and people will play it. But I wonder when, you know, they'll hit that, like, critical mass where people are like, you know, I'm kind of done with farming games.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would assume it's soon.
And games Zynga. That follow that exact same mechanic, I mean... That's kind of why I like Tiny Towers. I mean, there's another thing, like you can always like ferry people up and down your elevator. So even if all your stuff is on timers and you still want to stand there and waste time, you know, you can ferry people up and down in the elevator and make money, which is cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, you're not ever hitting a paywall or a wall where there's nothing to do. And I don't know, it's really good.
Yeah, it's good on them for not going straight for the paywall. That's yeah. a jugular move.
I mean, that's why Pocket Frogs did so well, I think, because... paying really was optional, and it is Pocket Frogs and Tiny Tower are one of the very few free-to-play games that I can think of where they actually are free-to-play. You right. know, I mean, really, I would say probably the only other ones that I can think of, like the big one would be League of Legends, you know, where you really don't have to pay to play that, but that's a PC game.
Or Guild Wars, where you only pay for the expansions.
Right.
You know, it's a perpetual world that you can participate in totally for freezies.
Yeah. Jared, you know, I usually don't get into these types of games either, but I'm totally into Tiny Tower.
I'm going to have to check like, it out.
Yeah, you need to. Well, you know, the thing I was going to say is it kind of it has like a game dev story vibe to it because...
Oh,
yeah, it really does.
The tenants that you bring into your apartments, they all have like different skills in different areas. And then... you know, you'll have to put them to work at certain places, and you don't want to put someone that's like a good retail person in a food restaurant or something because it won't be.
Yeah,
a good
I do like
pass.
How. Yeah, I like the stat system. I like how it's light enough that you can like basically ignore it if you want to, or yeah. if you want to try to like power game it, you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is really cool.
All I know is that I haven't hit any kind of paywall or anything like that. Even the timer sequences are pretty short. To where you can kind of go in and whip some things up and then come back in like 15 or 20 minutes and everything's already done.
Right.
But I want to give this game as much money as I possibly can. Like it makes me want to give it money. So it's like they've totally like, they don't force you into it. They pretty much like entice you with like an awesome game to want to give it money, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the point of the thing that I wrote up, I guess that was probably a couple months ago now, about like League of Legends and that, you know, games like this shift the purchasing compulsion to, oh my God, I'm having so much fun with this game. I want to, you know, I want to buy things. I want to purchase this, you know, like unlockable or virtual currency or stuff like that instead of, you know, hitting that paywall and then having like the feeling, well, I don't know if it's kind of extreme to call it the feeling of dread, but, you know, like when you hit that and you're like, oh, I have to pay to keep going.
Right.
So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I would easily be giving this thing a few dollars just to get some extra coins and build up a few floors quicker or something. You know what I mean?
Don't say that too loud.
But you don't have to either, though. I haven't spent anything yet, and it takes, I'm only up to like 5 floors. I've been playing this yesterday. But I'm about to hit my 6th floor. And it'd be kind of cool to go a little faster, build a couple floors right away, but I'm going to wait it out, see how far free can get me.
Yeah, but, that's hot. That's hot. I like
you, Tower. It's going to get me through the whole game, I think. So. You like Yoot Tower?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So I think, man, you guys are selling me hard.
Yeah, this is kind of like the Yoot Tower meets Game Dev Story.
I mean, it's like, what did you like about Yoot Tower, though? I mean, like, if you liked all, like, that super technical micromanagement, that doesn't really exist in Tiny Tower.
Yeah, I mean, like, just the idea and how that it was structured and things like that is probably what I enjoyed more. Now, that game was a little too, just like most simulation games, specifically SimCity games, just like this weird dissonance that kind of formed between, you know, the technical things that you're supposed to do versus what you really want to do. You know, Tiny Tower probably works better.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's so good how there's no spoilage mechanic. You know, I've been like repeating that over and over, but I just love how you're never punished in this game.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's almost the first thing that'll turn me off to a game. The second you get like a notification that's like, well, your strawberries died. And I'm like, are you serious? You know, like, I don't even want to play that game anymore once that sort of stuff happens. So It's nice that it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reasoning that developers will give you for you, like, because I've asked, you know, flat out asked developers why they need to put the spoilage mechanic in, and then like the idea is to keep force people to keep coming back. But I think like when you force people to do anything, you just give them an aversion to, you know, that activity.
You know what I thought was kind of interesting is that the last I can't remember which Angry Birds it was. I think it was the regular one or the seasons, but it just got 30 levels. That only unlocks a day. So they give you 30 brand new levels, but you can only play one per day over the next like 30 days or whatever.
Yeah, that was seasons.
And it's like they're basically, I don't like that. They did that with leading up to Christmas too. It was like the advent calendar sort of thing. So one new level a day, and I just lost interest after like 2 days. I never went back, played them.
How do you feel about that 1,000 Heroes game, then? Have you tried that?
No, I didn't check that out. I didn't even see anything on it.
It's kind of the same thing. It's like a platformer, I guess, but each day there's a new level. And that's the gimmick of the game, is you play that day's level, and you can't go back and you can't go forward.
Really?
Or maybe you can go back. Oh, yeah, you can go back to the previous day.
I'll have to check that out. That actually, I mean, that's sort of different to me for some reason. That sounds kind of like the whole game is built around that, but I don't know. For Angry Birds, it's like you just get all these updates and they're right away available and stuff like that, and then for them to like all of a sudden like time limit the updates, I don't know. It just kind of turns me off to it. I'll check out that 1,000 Heroes though, just to see what it's like.
Yeah, it's worth a look. Just I think games like that are neat, where, you know, you can load them up every day and get something new, and I kind of liked Angry Birds for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So. I can already hear the masses gathering their torches and pitchforks, Eli.
Oh.
Can't say you like Angry Birds. That is not cool, bro.
I enjoy Angry Birds.
You are dead to me. In fact, I am segueing smoothly to Jared's game. One Bit Ninja. I want to play this game in a hard way. It stirs my loins, sir.
Does it?
Stirs them. Yes.
Yeah.
It's waking the dragon.
In a bad way. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't really understand what you mean by that.
Come on, my house. I'll show you.
Oh. So, One Bit Ninja is pretty badass. I was playing it all last night, actually, till the wee hours. But it's inspired from like Game Boy, Game & Watch, all the old school handheld games. So it has like this, it looks like Super Mario Land, basically. But it's a little platforming game. And then the whole hook of it is that you can tilt the perspective and show everything in 3D, a la like Paper Mario games or that game Fez that's coming out, where you can kind of switch perspective and it changes things up. It's kind of like that. So it's like a normal retro platformer, but then you tilt the perspective and you open up like secret passageways that you can go that you wouldn't have seen before and stuff like that. So it works really well. It's awesome. Like the tilting the 3D perspective part is, it still like kind of impresses me every time I see it. I just think it looks so cool. And then the actual game itself is like really good. Like the level designs are really good, and It's really
how do you feel about
hard.
Not being able to go backwards.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So the controls are, you touch the left side of the screen just to move forward, and then you touch the right side just to jump. So it's just two buttons, because the developer wanted to simplify things. He wasn't happy with like virtual buttons for platformers. So he has this two-button scheme, and it actually works really good. Like, you get used to it pretty quickly. There's certain parts, like, you know, you never really realize when you're playing, like, Super Mario or something that you'll jump in the air, and then to jump on the head of, like, an enemy, you'll kind of readjust in the air to land on their head. Well, you can't do that, because you can only move forward. So you have to kind of, like, time everything right or slow down a little bit more and take your time jumping and moving to land on like someone's head or to make like a precise jump. You don't have as much like wiggle room while you're in the air, but it's something you get used to like pretty quickly. And so far it hasn't really messed with me. Like I was playing it for a long time and you know, now I'm real comfortable with jetting through a level pretty much, without stopping. And yeah, it all just kind of clicks. Like I think, Moth's Speedrun tried to do a new control mechanic where, you know, you touch left side to move left, touch right side to move right, and then you touch both to jump. So that one was like, I couldn't coordinate myself to get used to that. And
I tried really hard to like that game too.
Yeah, I liked that the idea of the control setup like that because, you know, I mean, it could be really like responsive and fast, and I mean, it could be even better than like buttons, but I just couldn't get it. I mean, it kind of reminded me of like if you ever try to drive a car with both your feet and you gas with the right and brake with the left or whatever, and it's just too hard to coordinate your two legs to do that.
Wait, that's not how you're supposed to drive?
Apparently not. Do you drive with two legs? Do you?
No, I was just joking.
It doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense unless you're using a clutch. I always thought you should be able to use both. True.
Are you serious?
My grandma used to drive like that, and I guess it's like really dangerous because if something happens right in front of you and you have to like subconsciously react to it, your brain can't sort out like, oh, you should be hitting the brake with that leg or whatever.
Whatever.
Like it's faster to react with one leg. But anyway, that's why that control scheme didn't work out. But the 1-in-1-bit ninja is good. It's just, I mean, think of how many Mario games you play where you're just holding, you know, to the right anyway because you're just blazing through a level. That's kind of what this game is about. But if you pass something and you need to go back because you missed a coin or something, you can. But the whole, like, design of the game is that, you know, you'll go through it and you'll kind of learn the layout of each level by looking at things in 3D, finding the secret passages, and then finding, like, the best route to get all the coins and stuff like that. So it's really designed for you to play it like multiple times over and over, learn the layout, and then once you've like explored everything and you know the best way to go, then you can jump in there and try and get like the ultimate like speed run, taking all the right paths and stuff like that because you already know where they are. So it's kind of interesting, and that has like good replay value if you like to like explore and then figure out the best way to go and then go back and like kind of get a good score or whatever. So, I don't know. I'm really digging it a lot. I can see some people maybe not liking the control scheme because it does take a little bit of getting used to, but it's not really that bad. And, yeah, maybe just the pacing is kind of slow when you're exploring everything at first. But I think that's kind of like a high point of the game for me.
Really?
So, yeah. Jared says game of the year. Confirmed on the Touch Arcade Show. Go ahead and put it in your press release.
I don't think
releases.
That's what I said,
Game
Brad.
Of the year!
I think you're putting words in my mouth, no.
Brad.
Brad,
you like this game too?
I like the idea of it. I need to play it.
You didn't play it yet?
When I loaded it up, the first thing I thought was, oh my god, I'm not looking forward to discussing this with Brad.
Why is that?
Because control. You can't move backwards. The controls, yeah. Not being able to move backwards. Yeah. I was like, this is going to result in a 20-minute argument about how terrible this game's controls are.
I can comment on it in this way. If the game is actually built to support the fact that you can't run backwards, fantastic. Now, if it's not, if it's just being stupid,
well,
then of course
the
I'm going to take
problems
with
it. You could argue that either way, though.
Well, I think if you could go backwards in this game, it would pretty much ruin it.
The way Jared's explaining it, it feels like that was a very conscious design decision and not made because, I don't know, something won't render when you start running backwards or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, no. It
was a conscious decision.
Yeah. No, I think it's a really cool kind of compromise because, you know, when I saw all the original videos and stuff, I was like, oh, this looks so cool, but I'm never that happy with controls on a platformer on iOS, and I think this kind of nails it in a weird way.
That'd be interesting to see, too. Good controls on a platformer. I'll have to check that out for sure, Zeez. Two games. Definitely got to check it out.
Because you can never go backwards, I feel like I make a lot of errors because I'm not able to correct my jumps in air.
Right.
Like Jared was saying earlier. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think like Jared said as well, as you'll get used to that kind of stuff, just like in Little Big Planet, which is a more floaty and also a game where you can step back and forward, you know, a lot of the jumps in there were awkward at first, right? But then you kind of got an idea of what they were shooting for in terms of the design and things like that, and you can really take advantage of that mechanic. I tell you what, guys, let's close out the game stuff, and we're going to take a little break so I can take a dump. But after that break...
Cool.
In which you will not hear me taking a dump. But
I thought you said you already took a dump.
I can what? No, I haven't told you I've cleaned out my bowels yet. Now I am cleaning out my bowels.
That's
in
good
about
to know.
All right.
50 seconds, boys.
Bring the mic.
When we come back, though, we got some decent news. A little bit of news about DENA and what they've been doing.
Dina.
Is it? What is it?
I think it's Dina.
You just say Dina?
Yeah.
Dina that's with how, a small
that's
e.
how Jason Citron pronounces it, and I've never known Jason Citron to be wrong about anything.
There you go. So we got some stuff to talk about with Dina. Just throwing me off because it sounds like a girl's name. And we also
it's a
have
a Japanese company.
It's Dana. Okay.
Dana.
I've also heard DNA.
Yeah.
But for the sake of the Touch Arcade podcast, we'll go with the Jason Citron preferred pronunciation.
Okay. And in our last segment, where we usually do user feedback, we got something special this week. We get a lot of game tips, or a lot of questions about games, because they think tips@toucharcade.com is an actual game tips line, like we're the Nintendo hotline. So
I wish we were the Nintendo hotline.
So for this week, I've collected 4 or 5 of the game help questions that we've received, and we'll read them on air and see if we can answer them.
I would rather field phone calls from people confused about words with friends than PR people any day of the week.
That would be nice. That would be nice. But anyway, look for that. We're just taking a short little breaky here. So catch you on the other side. Hey, welcome back. You forget what you're listening to? No? Great!
What am I on?
You're on the Touch Arcade Show episode something.
Oh.
And it's Friday, hopefully, if I edited this in a proper amount of time. We're going to go straight into the front page. Going to talk a little bit about the news of the week, which, you know, as we talked about earlier, not much going on. Dina, though, is resuming its tear. After a $400 million buyout of Injimoco, the team has also announced a couple more, I would call them acquisitions, even though that wording wasn't used. They've developed or announced two more partnerships between developers. Number one, they're working with Level 5, the creators of Professor Layton, in a Professor Layton game that connects with a series that they do over in Japan called, what is that? Kaito Royale. The game is called
Did you think that this meant specifically that we were going to see a Professor Layton iOS game, or is that locked up with Nintendo pretty well?
I don't think it's locked up with Nintendo. I think Level 5 does what it wants. I think it's known to be a DS title just simply because of its mechanics. It's an interesting one, though, because it's a crossover between those two games. It's called Professor Layton Royale, right? And in the press release...
That's what seemed kind of weird to me. Like, I almost wonder if it will be a... I don't know. I don't know what it'll be.
Yeah, I mean, like, in the press release, they're pretty cagey. They say specifically, apparently, that you will be able to take on the role of a detective, as well as a thief and a citizen. You know, as a comment, it doesn't sound too lightning to me. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't sound too Professor
Layton.
Yeah,
I mean, granted, I don't know much about the Nintendo side of things, but I think if Professor Layton wasn't locked up with Nintendo, there would be a lot more Professor Layton games, because it seems like they can shit out a sequel and, like, instantly make money.
You have to understand, though, it's a Japanese company. They're not going to put something out on PC. No less, like, you know, an Xbox.
Well, what about, like, Xbox Live Arcade or PSN or something like that?
When's the last traditional Japanese developer, like Level 5, put out a downloadable title?
Mm.
Never. those companies just don't operate that way. I don't know. I mean, yeah, you're probably right. There probably is something with that. But I think Level 5 probably still has the ability to license out the brand, which is, you know, what you're alluding to. I think that's what's going on here, is that they're just slapping on the brand onto a Kaito Royale game. So there's that. Also, you know, that's going to be on MOBAge on iOS, so it's going to be a free-to-play kind of joint. And then later in the day, they announced that Infinity Blade is coming to the MOBAge as well. It's going to be called Infinity Blade X, or I guess maybe Infinity Blade Cross. There's a couple ways you can pronounce that kind of stuff. Not really sure. Obviously, it didn't come with a pronunciation key in the press release. It's going to be free to play. In a nutshell, they'll make you pay for weapons and armor and gold. They weren't too specific on exactly how much that stuff would cost or how much you'll actually get, you know, because in the worldwide version, or at least the U.S. version, I know specifically, you can pretty much earn everything you want with in-game gold. So I just wonder where the paywalls are going to be.
You know what I'm going to be interested to see? And I actually just thought about this last night randomly as I was pondering the mobile game industry.
Wow.
The big thing with the MOBAge. And, you know, I've heard that that's not how you pronounce that either.
Jesus, are you serious?
I've heard that it's MOBAgay.
Well, yeah, whatever.
Because, no, not doing it. Japanese, like, what the Japanese companies do is, or not companies specifically, but when you shorten something, you take, like, the first letters. So it's, like, mobile games, but it, like, goes to MOBAgay or something like that.
Nah, that's
silly. I don't know. We can keep calling it MOBAge.
Calling it MOBAge.
But, like, the big thing that they were pushing is their MOBAge game tech SDK,
which
is this kind of, like, interesting game engine where you build all the game logic and everything else using, like, this weird JavaScript and, like, XML wizardry and all this other stuff. So essentially what happens is when you download one of these games, you are basically downloading this MOBAge game engine plus a preloaded asset pack, and, like, it points to where it's getting its logic and stuff from. And this is, like, an extremely dumbed down example of how this works. But what this allows them to be able to do is, like, tweak gameplay real time by, like, pushing updates, because the update is just in this file that they can send down to the game engine.
Interesting.
I mean, does that make sense, my explaining this?
It does. Xbox Live has a thing called temporary file storage. Xbox Live Arcade games have that. And it's essentially just like an XML document that developers can edit on the fly to screw with game values.
Right.
So,
and
yeah, it's kind of
so,
like
that. You know, this is completely cross-platform. I don't know what the correct name for it is. I mean, they call it NG Core as well. So I don't know. But this makes me wonder if this is even going to be an Unreal Engine game. And if it's not an Unreal Engine game, is it going to have the same graphics as Infinity Blade? Or is it going to be like some weird turn-based kind of 3D game?
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen with that?
I can't imagine them changing it up too much.
Because the big thing of, you know, the MOBAgay, you know, game tech SDK and the NG Core, you know, whatever you're calling this is... that, you know, you write your little JavaScript code once and you deploy it to everything that their game engine runs on.
Huh.
So by doing that, in my opinion, that basically guarantees that this is not going to be a game that just looks as insane as Infinity Blade, because if it's going to use their game tech, it can't be Unreal Engine. Because this company isn't an iPhone-specific company. The reason they're so big is because they deploy their stuff to, like, every smartphone capable of running a game.
Well, they say specifically in the press release, developed with Epic's Unreal Engine 3.
Well, then it'll be interesting to see if this is a hybrid of the two like game tech.
Maybe they just use. Could the game tech just be something that's tacked on that's going to be like the how you pay for things or how they can adjust? Like,
yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It'll just be a UI element.
Yeah, kind of like the weapons and how much they cost and stuff like that. And then
maybe
those will be things they can tweak on their side if they need to or whatever. I just think it'd be so stupid if it was like, here's, you know, Dina's Infinity Blade, and it's like not even the same game. It's like,
well, yeah, but the way their business model works is to deploy across, you know, iPhone, Android, and all this stuff, and be able to like rapidly push all kinds of updates to keep people coming back and keep people buying whatever the new, you know, freemium content is.
Well, you know, if they had to go through that much trouble, why don't they just rip the game off? That's what I would.
Well, because I think the Infinity Blade brand has significant value now on the App Store.
Yeah.
But in these territories where MOBA is big, does it?
I don't know.
See, I mean, like, that's the thing. I'm pretty sure there's not...
There's a lot of question marks here in this wacky Mad Lib of MOBA.
Yeah, it's a weird company, too. Check out their website if you got the time, listeners. It's a trip, man. Let's head into another Dina announcement real quick. Angie Moco, which is owned by this company, is opening up a studio in Stockholm. And... it's called Ingimoco Sweden, right? Is that right?
Yes.
And they've hired Ben Cousins, who's a former EA GM, to head it up. And that's remarkable in that Ben Cousins was the dude behind Battlefield Heroes / Battlefield Play for Free. And he also spent some time at EA DICE in Sweden as well, working on proper you know, Battlefield games. But this guy's specialty is in free-to-play. And, you know, that gives you a pretty good idea of the direction Ingimoco Sweden is headed in.
Was there ever, like, a public post-mortem of Battlefield Play for Free?
I don't think so. They might have talked about it at GDC a couple times, but I don't know if they've actually, like, proper, like...
Because I'm genuinely curious if that business model worked with the Battlefield games.
I don't think it did, because initially they launched with the idea that in-game advertisements would essentially fund the product, and that didn't pan out, obviously. And you know, it's always been in this like, constant revision period. I don't really think it's actually ever really taken off, which is what's kind of weird.
When I read about that originally, it seemed to me it was like EA wanted to dabble in free-to-play with a hardcore game, and they wanted to utilize an IP that people recognized, which, you know, that all fits really well. But I just don't know, like, how many people ever ended up actually playing it, you know?
Yeah.
Because it would seem to me that, like, your hardcore first-person shooter Battlefield player is just going to play a Battlefield game that they already own. They're not going to be like, oh, well, let me play this free-to-play one instead of, you know, the Battlefield game that I spent $60 on that, you know?
Yeah, and I've heard weird things about just gun balance and things like that. So yeah, traditional Battlefield players are going to mess with that. But then again, traditional Battlefield players are invested because they spent $60 into a product. I mean, they're not just going to go play for free. Especially, you know, we're also talking about the PC audience, which is a very small core group of guys. And, you know, those dudes are constantly doing something with their games and staying,
yeah, you
know, staying ahead of the curve.
I mean, it seems like a really cool experiment to me.
Yeah.
And this guy definitely has the pedigree behind him to do similarly cool things, you know, in the iPhone and mobile space.
Yeah.
And with Ingimoco's bankroll, I mean, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting is that when I went to WWDC last year, they showed off... their follow-up to like Eliminate, which was called Weapons Free tentatively, and that like never materialized. And so I wonder if they're going to be trying to work on the next like freemium first-person shooter like Eliminate style, but try and maybe take a different approach to it or something.
I don't know. I feel like Eliminate got outpaced pretty quickly by like Gameloft's, oddly enough, online multiplayer that they were offering, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of true.
The same people that would be interested in Eliminate were the same people that were interested in Nova, you know?
Yeah.
And if you can play, what was the original Nova, like 4-on-4 or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
You know,
so.
Like 4-on-4 team deathmatch versus like 4 players total?
Yeah,
I'd like to see the numbers on those games, because I seriously doubt that there's very many people really seriously screwing with online games over iOS like that.
There's a bunch.
I mean, like,
there's a dedicated following for those games.
I bet if you loaded up Nova 2 right now, you could find a match without much issue.
Well, I mean, I realize that, but I mean, what are we talking about here? 1,000 dudes? 40? 50,000? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's another thing, too. But, I mean, like, again, these free-to-play games, you know, you develop these things cheaply enough, and you garner, like, even 1,000 people who are willing to buy things, like, on a weekly basis. Your game's bought and paid for. You know, it's over.
Yeah, especially if it's a reskin that you already, you know, recoup the development costs.
Right, yeah.
On the previous releases.
And I was going to make the point earlier. I'm not really specifically sure that the core audience that maybe we're assuming that Injimoco Sweden is shooting for here is really that invested in free-to-play games. I feel like that's more of kind of a, just in general, like a more casual focused genre. Just because, like, you're trying to snag people in who normally, you know, wouldn't pay for games or whatever, and then rope them in with these carrots and like, I feel like core gamers really want established experiences from beginning to end and things of that nature, and I'm not really sure.
Well, how do you explain the insane success of League of Legends,
though? Is it really insane?
Yeah, dude, like, they have more money than God, and they're hiring basically everyone that, like, knocks on their door. It's crazy.
I mean, you're right, but also that's you're right. I mean, straight
up. they do seasons of the game. They had the season one championship where, like, close to 500,000 people watched the stream live.
That's also a Dota game and the only one out there right now. But I'm wondering what'll happen when Valve releases Dota.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't know. I mean, I think that they've kind of proven that, like, if you release a really good hardcore game based on the freemium model, people will play it. Tons of people will play it. It just has to be a good game.
And it probably has to be a strategy game, too.
I don't know about that.
I mean, because that's where the majority of PC players are.
Yeah. Well, I think something like League of Legends would have excelled on any platform. I mean, because their business, or their payment model is just so good.
Well, you know, that's another problem, too, though. You know, specifically in console spaces, nobody wants a part of that. Nobody wants to touch free-to-play games.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's move on to another piece of news here. That's a little... it's more interesting for Eli. I'll say that. New game called Card Combat coming out, created by the Magic the Gathering dude. Or at least he had a hand in it. You want to talk about that?
Sure. Well, I mean, these collectible card games on the App Store have been very hit or miss. I would say that most have been significant misses. Which is weird, because you would think that, like, the iPad and the iPhone would be so conducive to, like, you know, a turn-based card game that has, you know, just the interface would work so well for something like that. But it seems like so many of them are created by developers who are, like, collectible card game enthusiasts, you know, who might have played, like, Magic the Gathering or the World of Warcraft card game or the Star Wars card game. So it seems like, and, you know, I keep saying seems because, you know, I don't know for sure, but it seems like what they have done in many of these games is being like, oh, well, I like, you know, the resource system from the World of Warcraft game, let's pull that in. And I like the creature system from Magic the Gathering, let's pull that in. And so what you end up with usually is a, like, mishmash of weird, like, half-baked mechanics, which, I don't know, has just always been kind of disappointing to me. And I really doubt we'll ever get a real Magic the Gathering client, you know, for the Magic the Gathering online service for the iPad, as amazing as it could possibly be. So I guess this is a decent alternative, because co-created by Richard Garfield, who... you know, is responsible for creating just a ridiculous amount of collectible card games and board games and stuff, like most notably Magic the Gathering and the Star Wars trading card game. And there was a vampire game that was fun, but it didn't really catch on, like most things vampire. And I don't know, it seems cool. It's in Canada right now. You know, like a lot of these online free-to-play games do their like beta testing in Canada. I haven't spent entirely too much time with it, but I like what I've seen so far. I just wish they would have chosen a different name for it, because Card Combat seems like something with a K, seems like something lifted directly out of 1989.
Or Ed Boon's brain.
Yeah, it's like a Mortal Kombat minigame.
Yeah, exactly. Weird. I mean,
if you're going to do card combat, why wouldn't you do card with a K and combat with a K?
These aren't questions you're supposed to ask.
No, dude. You know what?
No. It just like it comes off as
stupid.
Yeah. I didn't want to say it, but
hell, I will. You know, it's
the funny thing about these card games is that you're saying they pull different aspects from different types of games and then like kind of mash them together, but like Magic the Gathering or like any substantial, you know, trading card game, competitive game, takes like years and years of like balancing, and there's tons of like nuance.
Oh, well, yeah.
And all the strategy and all the characters and stuff like that. So you can't just like slap something together in like 6 months and be like, here's a new card game. You know, it's like you need to really build from the ground up and kind of experiment, and it needs to evolve over like a long time. So,
right.
Games have like a hard chance of really catching on, it seems.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not like totally like, you know, over the moon excited about card combat, because I don't think the initial release is that interesting. What'll be interesting to see is if it continues as a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Because something that's like card-based like this could very easily be a cross-platform game that, you know, everyone's kind of playing together, and it doesn't matter what you're playing it on because the gameplay is turn-based, so it doesn't matter, you know, if you're able to use a mouse or your finger or anything like that. So I could see someone turning this into like a really cool card system online, but you know, who knows if this will be it or not.
It just sucks because think of how good like an official Magic game could be.
Oh like, yeah, I mean the
platform on iOS and have it be on Android, have like tons of players, and like the game is already there, you know what I mean?
What's crazy, yeah, they have the infrastructure already for the Magic the Gathering online client.
Yeah.
But the client is terrible, and it hasn't been updated like since 1992, it seems like.
Yeah, the Wizards of the Coast people just continue to baffle me. They continue to never get a developer that can handle their property.
The Duels of the Planeswalker games are pretty good.
All right. I mean, maybe on PC they're better. I don't know. But I mean,
I guess I should step back on that and be like, looking at the Magic the Gathering online client, I was blown away by how good Duels of the Planeswalkers was in comparison.
Right. I mean, like, it's so weird, too, because obviously this is a company that needs to invest heavily in digital. Like, any spare change that they have,
yeah,
it needs to go in there, absolutely. But, you know, they just refuse.
What's crazy about it is that there have been, like, preview videos shown at various Magic events of what, like, the new Magic the Gathering online client will look like. But, I mean, that was, like, years ago. I don't know why they're not capitalizing on this. I mean, it just seems like they're sitting on a money-making machine that they're just unable to push the start button on,
yeah,
which is weird. So we'll see.
You need to go in there and shake things up, Eli.
Would. I mean, I think a big
CEO of Wizards of the Coast.
I think a big problem with that might be that Wizards of the Coast is owned by Hasbro, which is one of the treasure chests that the greedy EA dragon guards.
Oh.
So
EA will eventually come out with Magic, and it won't have online play.
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know where that all lies.
I don't think EA has IP control of that at all.
Oh, really?
I've never seen it in the portfolio.
EA has like all the Hasbro board games.
They do have that, yeah, for sure. You know, it might be a deal where Hasbro has licensing rights to anything that they produce from the cards. You know what I mean? It might be one of those weird things, like you know, the Warhammer series has deals like that as well. You know, where,
I mean,
where
I would just hate to think that something as cool as Magic the Gathering would be limited by like weird licensing deals from paired companies. You know,
I mean, that's
and
how
I'm
it goes.
Sure that's probably I'm sure that's part of the problem.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about something else here. Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick, who's my favorite kind of dude because he's a weightlifting CEO. I almost put a picture of his Men's Fitness magazine cover in our story on the front page. But anyway, he was talking to Forbes the other day about tablets and the economic meaningfulness of iOS games. If you cruise around, well, first of all, Take-Two Interactive, it's a label for like 2K games and Rockstar games and stuff like that. Like it's really confusing. But anyway, you know, you got Civilization Revolution and Chinatown Wars. Those are essentially the only 2K games or Take-Two games on the App Store. So he was talking about that a little bit, where he said that Chinatown Wars was a, creatively successful, but at the price point that they're forced to sell it from, which is like $9.99 on the iPhone and probably $800 on the iPad.
I think it's been on sale too, down to cheaper than that as well.
But anyway, at that lower price, it's not economically meaningful to the studio. And further on, he's kind of pressed by the Forbes dude about, like, what do you think a tablet game should cost? And the writer floated the idea of $20, $30, or even $40 tablet games. And Zelnick was like, I don't see why you couldn't do that. So that's pretty much the sum of his iOS talks. I guess at the end of the day, he doesn't mind. And he probably wants higher priced games on the platform, right? And that's something that doesn't jive with the typical consumer who expects to go on the App Store and the product is free.
I think he has sort of a hint of bitterness because Chinatown Wars was like financially a flop on the DS originally.
Right.
So they poured it over to iOS, which takes a lot of the work out of creating a new game because they just ported everything over. Mm-hmm. And so they can throw it out there, and then they sold it for $10 and it didn't go on sale for a good 6 months or so.
Until the Chinese New Year, I think, was
yeah,
the sale.
It was $10 forever, and it was consistently in the top charts. I mean, it had to sell a lot of copies. And then especially after all the sales, and it's been out there for, a year and a half or whatever. But
yeah, the cheapest it's been is $5.
Yeah, $5 is still premium price to most people out there. So, but I mean, it had to sell. I'd be curious to see how many copies it sold total on iOS.
Yeah.
Because if I remember right, it sold 100,000 copies on DS or something really pathetic like that. Like maybe 300,000, but it was definitely a flop, even though it was an amazing game.
Yeah, that was so disappointing. I think,
yeah, it was.
The game was awesome.
Dude, it's one of the best Grand Theft Auto games.
I couldn't believe that they got the DS to do that, honestly. First time I loaded it up, I was like, holy cow, this is crazy.
Yeah, I know. I felt the same way. It was a whole new world. And then they've pretty much made an improved version for iOS, which is even crazier to me that you have a full Grand Theft Auto game in your pocket. And this is a year and a half ago. But so I think he's just kind of got some leftover bitterness that it didn't do well on the DS because they built it from scratch for that system.
Right. Yeah.
And they had to invest a lot of time and money into it. And then to see it flop, which probably kind of pissed them off. I'm sure the iOS sales picked up a lot of that, initial bad financial gain or whatever. So, but I don't know. I don't think, I'd like to see if they created that Grand Theft Auto from scratch just for iOS. It wasn't a DS port or anything, and then sold it at $10, sold as many copies as they did. I wonder how things would shake out then, if they would turn profit on it or what.
Yeah, I think the more interesting question, too, is that, can you foresee a $40 tablet game, a $40 iPad game, and would you pay for it? I mean, we see Square Enix getting damn close. Final Fantasy III was what, $20?
I think in order for that to work, you need IP that is so recognizable that everyone knows what it is and everyone wants it. And I, thinking about it, I think the only company that probably can get away with it and is Square Enix because of how rapid Final Fantasy fans are.
What about a Call of Duty game?
I think a Call of Duty game could sell for a lot of money too.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
But there's a select few franchises out there that I think would energize the player base to the point where they would pay that kind of pricing for an iOS game. And the bigger issue is even if you started selling it that much, I think you'd have so many people waiting it out for a sale because of the trend of sales on the App Store. I mean, you almost always can save money by just waiting a month and sometimes saving a lot of money doing that. Yeah. And with apps like the App Shopper app, I mean, you can just set it and forget it, and wait for it to alert you and then buy the game. It's not like there's any scarcity of games to play either. Yeah. So if a Call of Duty game came out, you could just bookmark it, forget about it, and in a couple months, probably buy it for half price.
Well, I think that they've kind of shot themselves in the foot already, even with big brands, because they all end up dropping to a dollar really quick.
Well, right. So I mean, that's, That's kind of what I was expecting to happen originally when you know, all the original App Store pricing was shaking out. Was I was expecting all the indie developers to be fighting for the 99-cent price point, but the established studios with real IP to be like, well, no, you know, we're selling our stuff at $10 because you know this is what we're going to sell it for.
Yeah, you know? And I think the larger thing, like I have no problem paying for a $40 game on the iPad, right? But there's got to be two things. I mean, number one, it's got to be quality, obviously. Number two, it's got to be native. I think that's where Square Enix fucks up. Because Final Fantasy III is straight up a DS game, and there's barely any like native kind of design things that they went through with it. So, I mean, you're getting cheaped, right? I mean, that's at the end of the day. So,
no, I agree with that. But who's going to be the first company to do it? You know, right. I mean, that's a pretty substantial risk, especially when you consider the budget that companies like Take-Two and stuff are used to working with.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, we always talk about just in the industry and stuff, there's no like middle of the road kind of game. And maybe these can be like these medium budgeted, you know, iPad titles, like the $5 million game. You know, as opposed to either 1 million or under or 25 million or higher, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's, I don't know. It's, I can't really see 40 anytime soon. I can see 20 and up to 30, being like realistic. But I mean, a game coming out at $40, like, what game would that have to be? I mean, that would have to be like the newest Call of Duty and pretty much a straight port of the entire console game. You know what I mean? For me to like, for anyone really to be like, okay, I'll drop 40 on that. Or I mean, you know how like the Mac App Store gets like the full-blown game. It would have to be like that, I think.
It would have to be something that would be so good and so complete that it would nullify the fact that you're competing on like what's essentially the most competitive platform for software ever made.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I would have paid $30 for Sword and Sorcery on the iPad, easily.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
you're one of the few.
No,
I don't know if I'd pay $30, but I would have paid significantly more for it.
That's a smart and native game that is you know, so unique to the iPad. Like that's the thing. I mean, it's a unique game for the platform, and there's actual quality there behind it too.
Well, that's where I kind of feel like the lines of art and game get blurred, because it's almost like, yeah, I'd pay $30 for like that great album or that great movie I love that I could watch over and over. That's how I feel about Sword and Sorcery. Mm. It's like, yeah, I'd pay $30 for that just because I knew I enjoyed it so much, you know, playing through it the first time or whatever. I'd like to do it some more or something like that. Whereas, I don't know. I keep thinking of how Battlefield came out and was $1. And that's like a huge brand. Like Battlefield
that
has
was
tons
amazing.
Of fans.
Amazing.
It's a huge PC brand. It's a big console brand. It came out at $1. And really, that game wasn't bad on iOS. It was like what you would expect maybe like the DS or PSP version of a Battlefield game to be. And those would sell for like $30 or $40 easy. Plus, it had like online play and stuff like that. And so when that comes out immediately at $1... I don't even know if I have hope for Call of Duty.
Didn't it launch basically at like number one overnight or close to it?
It did.
I mean, I remember it shot up the charts like nothing I've ever seen before.
I think it came out like right around Christmas when everything went to $1. And it was number one for like a while. And it's really not a bad game or anything like that. You'd easily be happy paying $30 for it on a PSP or something. But so even if I think like a full-blown Call of Duty game, like I don't know if it would go for 40.
Yeah.
That'd be a tough sell to a lot of iOS gamers.
I'll talk about a tough... that was a bad segue. Anyway, let's move on to greener fields, greener pastures or something. Let's get into Segment D, boys. Feedback. And this week, like I said, we are going to read to you some of the emails we get from people who think we're the Nintendo helpline, or more specifically, the iOS hotline. Guys, this is going to be amazing. And also, I have not provided context for a lot of these emails.
Well, but to be fair, a lot of these emails don't include context. Like the subject will just be like, help.
Yeah.
And then the email body will be, how do I get the key?
Yep. Yeah, this is gonna be great. All right, so let's launch right into it. Email from this person. So when I play Plants vs. Zombies on the iTouch, I'm at level 4-2, and at a certain point each time, it crashes back to the home screen. How can I fix this? It's really annoying. I thought it was my iTouch until I tried out a couple other apps, and they work so perfectly. So it's only that app. Do I delete it, then re-download it, or ? Well, sir, I think you need to take a hammer to your iTouch. I think it's possessed. And failing that you can find a priest, I think you need to incinerate it.
I think a delete and download might be a good first step before you incinerate it, however.
Yeah, that might work as well.
You could try rebooting the device.
I would call an exorcist, though, because you might need to make an appointment in the future.
Absolutely.
A genius bar exorcist.
I don't know what kind of backlog your typical exorcist has. So
I heard their book nowadays.
By doing that, yeah, you could at least get something planned. So if your re-download doesn't work.
Oh, gosh. Okay, here's another one, entirely different. I will temporarily be out of the country and be unable to use my smartphone. Is there a way to play Words with Friends from my laptop? Well, ma'am, I don't think so.
I have a legitimate answer to this, actually.
Oh, do you? What you got?
Yeah. If you use your laptop and it has both an Ethernet jack and Wi-Fi, and you plug your computer into the Ethernet and then share your connection through Wi-Fi, you can turn on airplane mode so you're not connected to 3G, then turn on Wi-Fi, connect to your computer's Wi-Fi network that you just created, and go to town.
So here's a question for you, Eli. Do you think somebody that would send that email to us be able to do what you've just described?
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Another question. How do I get second key in bedroom, and how does the Ouija board work? I click on the questions, but nothing happens. Also, how do I get the phone to work? I have the phone. No, but nothing happens. Do the pictures in the R bedroom do anything?
Okay.
So let's take this apart, guys, so we can help.
So let's just guess one question what game this time. Might be for.
No. Well, this isn't for a game. This is a legitimate real-world question.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
How do I get second key in bedroom, and how does the Ouija board work? Guys, do
we I would say the bedroom likely doesn't have a key. If it does, that's weird. It probably just has one of those holes you can stick a toothpick in or whatever to get the lock to pop.
Well, actually, you need to get it's the second key. So if you can get the first key, the first key actually unlocks a box that holds the second key.
Well, maybe the second key is held in one of those magnet things. Look for hidden metallic surfaces that might hold a hide key.
There could be a fake rock outside of the door. Yeah. Look for that.
I feel like we could probably burn through the rest of these by simply saying, if you can't figure it out, set it on fire and see what happens, generally speaking.
I think we should look up how a Ouija board works, though. That's a valid question as well.
It's voodoo magic, work? I think, only.
Witches, right? Blood, sweat, tears.
Sweat.
Ouija believers feel the paranormal or supernatural is responsible for the Ouija's action. Alternatively, if you're just playing with a bunch of jerks, you can just move the thing around. I think that's what you do anyway.
I'm usually that guy.
Mm-hmm. Spelling out things like kill yourself and
boobs.
Boobs is a good one. I like to do that on calculators too.
How do you get the phone to work?
Is there a dial tone? Did it look into the wall?
We need more information on this question. Is it a cell phone, a rotary phone, regular touch tone phone?
Exactly. You need to re-email us and be way more specific.
Yeah.
Now, the next one's cracking me up.
Do the pictures in their bedroom do anything? Mine do not.
Mine has eyes that follow me around occasionally.
But does it do anything?
It's only when those darn kids are around.
I think we've we've substantially answered everything.
Absolutely. Next question: Fruit Ninja, and how do I sign up? I'm just gonna repeat that again. This is the entire question: Fruit Ninja, and how do I sign up, guys? This person needs help with signing up on Fruit Ninja. Is there even a sign-up thing? Like, I don't even understand. This is so fucking left field.
I have the Fruit Ninja sign-up sheet in my hand right here. I will put your name down.
Is this person retarded? I'm just going to ask it, because I have no idea. Like, why would you possibly ask this?
I'm signing them up right now, as we speak.
You're lucky Eli is such a nice guy.
You are signed up. You are signed up to Fruit Ninja.
You need to email back, like, an application that has, like, credit card number, bank account number, and see how much we can fish out of these people. Yeah.
DNA sample.
I'm going to read the last two in quick succession since we're kind of running low on time. This question is extremely complicated, and actually the emailer wrote us back at our tips line to actually say he discovered how to do this. But anyway, this has got to be the dumbest question, but how do I equip items in Pocket Legends? For example... And this guy, he has the craziest aim writing style I've ever seen. Like, literally, after every two words, he makes a hard line break. I actually had to symbol it again just so it was readable.
I think you should read it as if it were a poem.
Yeah. Okay, well, fine. For example, I click on my character name. Click on the helmet icon. Select inventory. Then I click on the archer cap. It shows up on my character, but when I exit, it's not on my tune. Am I missing a step?
Never mind,
he fixed it.
The step is referring to your character as a tune. That's the step you want to take out, and the rest of it will work.
Last
tune.
Last question is a question for... I can't remember the name of it now. How to places the 9 cubes in the mountain cave?
Guys, how do you place them like a smiley face how I do it.
How do you places the 9 cubes, guys?
I would leave 7 for a nice little smiley face after the eyes. I think that would work out well.
I shouldn't be making fun of these guys' typos, because Lord knows I've made some zingers on the front page of Touch Arcade.
Kidding.
So... What is the lesson learned here? Send us your vague game questions and we will answer them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally. But, you know, this has taken months, though.
Well, we've been collecting forever.
We've done God's work here.
I have 1,100 unread emails right now. And this is what some of them are questions like this.
I have 2,200.
This is why I don't get through my email.
Yeah. I have 2,283 tips right now, and I do not know what to do. I remember when Eli gave me access to our tips line. He was like, "You're gonna get a lot of emails." I was like, "Aha! I've worked at huge websites before. This ain't a problem. I've seen tips lines. Shit is intense."
Yeah.
Here is the final one for you.
Oh, you got another one.
Subject: Touch Arcade. Body. And this is the body of the email. Subject: Game has been updating on my iPhone for 2 days. Can you help? Sent from my iPhone. Best regards, Chris.
No.
Man, Chris, I don't know. Sounds like you need to sell that phone on eBay. How about that?
Broke it.
You broke it. It's broken. Throw it away. Give it to your kid sister. Let her chew on it. And chew on this. You won't see us again until next week. We're actually going to have another bonus pod coming up for you next week as well. And, of course, we're going to have a show on Friday. If you want to reach us before we talk to you again next week, you can contact us at toucharcade.com. Specifically, podcast@toucharcade.com is our emails. Please send us whatever you want, including game tips, I guess. Maybe we'll reply. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll read them on the show. Who knows? We're also all over your internets. So you can catch us on Facebook. That's /toucharcade on the Facebooks. And you can catch us on the Twitters at Touch Arcade or /TouchArcade if you're a URL man like I am. And you can catch us all respectively.
You a URL man? What does that mean?
I type in URLs instead of like at.
Oh, I never do bookmarks.
See, I'm just old school. just old school like that. All right, and also, if you want to contact us individually, you can do that as well. I'm at NicholsonB on the Twitters. Eli's at Hodap. And Jared, the bearded one Nelson, is at T.A. Jared.
You bastard. Jared T.A., you son of a bitch.
Jared.
You should change it to the bearded one.
Yeah.
If it's not taken, it's done and done.
What if you get fired? What are you going to do?
Hmm? Put Jared unemployed?
Shit, I should do that. All right. Guys, thank you so much for joining me this week. Listeners, thank you so much for joining me. If you want to rate us on iTunes, 5 stars, we'll accept good reviews. Thank you. Give us a look up on iTunes. Click 5 stars. Tell me your favorite monster movie this week. I would really like to know. And know that you can also rate us several times, apparently. Each time.
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
I don't know either. I think each time we post a new episode, you get another opportunity to review. Or you just have to have some sort of dementia that makes you want to review things constantly. Either or, you can do us twice. You can do us 3 times. You can do us 4 times if you want to. Favorite monster movie? Guys, what's your favorite monster movie? Let's do a quick hits right now. Favorite monster movie, Eli, what is it?
I don't know. I've never really been too into the monster movie genre,
okay.
I suppose.
Swamp Thing. That's mine.
I was going to say Swamp Thing because I watched it on Netflix, and I do not remember that movie being like that at all when I watched it as a kid.
I would also accept Toxic Avenger.
Oh, I love those movies.
Yeah.
The trauma movies, I don't know. They're too...
They're so too, silly. They're too I used to be way movie. Into them.
Jared, what's yours?
Well, I don't know if it counts as a monster movie, but I'm quite fond of Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh, I like that movie too.
Yeah. They're very monstrous clowns, let me tell you. Yeah,
if you are the kind of person that is scared of clowns, this is the most scary movie in the world.
Good God, I hate clowns.
Allow this. Allow that movie to be in this discussion.
Oh, also, a Netflix PSA. I noticed yesterday that there are now 177 episodes of Power Rangers streamable on Netflix.
You know, now I know what I'm doing.
The first episode is just ridiculous.
I bet.
I only watch it for Tommy, though. Fuck those other guys.
I'm totally watching that, by the way. Thank you for alerting me.
Go, Green Ranger.
It looks like, we were talking about this last night, it looks like it was filmed like 100 years ago. The video quality is so bad, and I don't know. Okay. I mean, well, apart from the special effects, it looks like Netflix like literally ripped this off VHS.
Well, while we let our monsters grow, find something
else
to do.
Also rate us with your favorite Power Ranger.
Yeah, you know
favorite
what? I'll
monster,
accept that
your favorite
too.
Power Ranger.
Good call. Yeah.
If you say Billy, quit the internet.
And we accept all Power Rangers,
including the ones in the movie. You know what?
Well,
the first Power Rangers movie, not bad, guys.
Really?
Really not bad. It is a good film.
There has been so many different series of Power Rangers. It's just insane.
No, I'm talking about the live action, like totally Hollywood project that he did. Like, really good. Zordon basically dies.
What?
I know, right? You gotta
spoil
watch
it for me.
It's good. It's good.
Spoiler.
It's not a spoiler. Wow. Come on. Also,
next, you're gonna tell me that Optimus Prime dies in the original Transformers.
What? Now that my life is over, this show. Is over.